than the old magical constructs. Several sorcerers of adept ranking must have spent years crafting the wards in concert, for them to be so vibrant decades later. He looked back once at HQ, the tower glowing above it, and saw a figure in the foyer where no one had been before. It moved with a lithe grace no human could come close to obtaining. But the vampire was too slim, and hair a dark brown instead of auburn, so it wasn't Simeon. An angel turned away, walking down the sidewalk. Isaac's apartment wasn't too far away, and he could walk it in about 30 minutes. He was reluctant to be exposed for so long, though. Whoever sent the demon after him could easily do so again, and he didn't want to be out in public if that happened. Too easy for innocent people to get killed in the fallout. Angel frowned, something bothering him. But there was nothing he could sense, even with his second sight, that gave him that odd feeling. He pulled in the ambient magic around him and used it as a spider would a web, and charged the gathered magic, sending it back out, tendrils at his sides, front and back, even above. He would know for at least a block out in all directions if anything was coming his way, be it undead, demon, or human. The street was empty. Not even a random pedestrian, foolhardy enough to brave the weather. Angel grumbled to himself but kept walking, keeping his eyes open and senses alert. He didn't want to be caught unawares again, whether it was a mugger or a demon. Isaac, at the incredibly wise age of 23, decided he wanted to get his own place. That was a problem for Angel and for Isaac, not that his little brother would ever admit he wasn't suited to live alone. Money wasn't a problem, considering they were the sole two remaining heirs for the Salvatore fortune. But the problem lay in Isaac himself and his remarkable lack of maturity. And for Angel, it was an issue because keeping Isaac out of trouble was far easier when they shared a roof. Angel skirted the dirty laundry on the floor next to the door, and he pocketed his keys. The wards he put in place to protect his brother were quiescent and thin, as if they hadn't been used or charged since Angel laid them in place months earlier, which appeared to be the case. He peered into the shadows of the unlit rooms and tried to see if anyone was present. The smell of bong water, weed, and stale beer was heavy, and he curled his lip at the half-eaten pizza left to go bad on the coffee table. He should be more upset than he was already, but Isaac was never one for cleaning, and at 23 didn't care all that much about doing the dishes or laundry. It was over 10 years since either of them had the benefit of servants, and Isaac was still acting like someone would come along and clean up after him. This bad habit of his carried over into the rest of his life, too. Angel lost track of how many times he'd rescued Isaac over the years, and Greg Doyle by extension, since that man was never far from Isaac's side. Except when he was cruising through gay bars and getting compelled by low-life wizards. Just thinking about last night's excursion and Greg Doyle's idiocy made Angel simmer. He walked down the hall, flipping switches as he went, but the lights stayed off. Isaac probably forgot to pay the utilities again. Isaac received a hefty quarterly stipend from his trust fund, so Isaac didn't need to work to support himself. He needed to be reminded that he had to pay bills and actually eat something other than beer and pizza on a regular basis. An angel was afraid to look in the refrigerator after the last time. "Isaac, are you home? Don't tell me you forgot to pay the light bill again. You know they charge a bigger deposit each time to get your power back on?" Angel called out as he headed through the dark for Isaac's room. He heard moaning and what sounded like whispering, and braced himself for what he might see when he opened the door. Knocking and waiting would just mean he would spend the rest of his life in this hallway, waiting for Isaac to open the door. "You better be getting attacked by vampires. I don't need to see..." Angel pushed open the door to his brother's room and blinked as his eyes adjusted to the shadows and the light streaming in from the windows that faced the street. "For fuck's sake, didn't you hear me knocking and yelling your name?" Greg Doyle pulled his mouth off Isaac's cock, lips wet and red. Isaac grabbed at his head and tried to pull him back down, but Angel's glare made Greg squirm free of Isaac's grip and get to his feet from where he was kneeling beside the bed. Angel looked away from his naked brother and his excited state, glaring at the ceiling. "Damn it, Angie, what the hell? Don't you know how to fucking knock?" Isaac swore as he grabbed a pillow and covered his lap with it. An Angel looked down to see Greg hurriedly pulling on a pair of jeans. Isaac's long dark hair was highlighted in deep red and long enough to brush his shoulders. And messy, from what Angel's nose was telling him, was a marathon day of bedroom antics. Nose itching, Angel tried the light switch, but the lights stayed dark. "I did knock, and I yelled, and I waited, but I guess you were occupied. Why are the lights out?" Angel said, leaning in the doorway and crossing his arms. "And why the hell haven't you been answering your cell? You haven't called, and why should I answer you anyway?" Isaac was a champion pouter, a holdover from his teenage years. And Angel again wondered for the millionth time where he went wrong raising Isaac after their parents died. Though it was problematic for a 20-year-old man to suddenly be responsible for the well-being of a 13-year-old boy, even if they were brothers, Angel had spent his own teenage years studying sorcery and the higher-level magics, leaving little time for quality time with Isaac. He never regretted that more than he did now as an adult, looking at Isaac's angry and unrepentant face. "You should answer me because I was worried, you little shit. I had to go clean out your fuck buddy's brains last night after he got compelled to break into Vamp HQ, and this morning I got attacked by a demon and had to blow up the street to banish it, and you won't fucking answer your phone." "Demons don't attack in daylight," Isaac said, routing about the bed and pulling out a pair of boxer briefs. Angel was thankful his brother decided to put on some clothing, and he noted the addition of another set of tattoos on his arms and torso. Isaac pulled a wrinkled tee over his chest before Angel could get a better look in the shadows. "How would you know? You don't practice," Angel snarked back. "And I banished it with Dawn's light and destruction of the circle. Don't distract me. Why the hell are the lights out? Is your cell down too?" Angel kept his eyes on Isaac and saw the minuscule flinch as Angel's words hit home. "Great. You get paid a ridiculous amount of money to live like a prince, and you can't even bother to pay your bills. You're 23, Isaac, not a damn kid." "You're right. I'm not a kid. So why don't you leave me alone?" Isaac snarled. An Angel tensed. That was a common refrain from Isaac, that Angel leave him be. But the second Isaac got drunk and ended up lost in the city without his wallet or cash, or thrown in jail and needed bail, it was Angel he called to come save his ass. Every time. "I would leave you alone," Angel gritted out, barely restraining himself. Greg was watching them both, shirt forgotten in his hands, eyes darting back and forth between them. "I would leave you be if I wasn't so damn sure you'd end up either dead or in jail if I didn't keep an eye on you. The wards aren't even powered up. Have you done anything with them since I put them in place? And did you not hear me say that your cocksucking buddy over there got compelled to invade Vamp HQ? Or that a demon went after me this morning? Dead or in jail, I wouldn't have to listen to you bitch all the damn time," Isaac snapped back. An Angel tamped down on his anger. This was how it always went between them now, ending in arguments and fists. Where the hell did the quiet, bookish boy go who used to follow him around all day asking questions? "And yeah, Greg told me about the hex. Probably just a prank went wrong. And you're such an ass, Angel, I'm not surprised someone sent a demon after you. You probably have a whole list of people wanting you dead. No one pays $5,000 and drops a hex on someone to break into the Master of Boston's headquarters and not steal something all for a damn prank, Isaac. That shit just doesn't happen. No wizard-ranking practitioner is going to risk himself like that for a joke. Someone is circling us. I know it. And if you aren't careful, they could come for you next. So that means you pay your electric bill, power your wards up, turn your cell back on, and make smarter choices about who you fuck." He knew from the second the words left his mouth that all he was doing was making it worse. Yet he couldn't stop himself. There was no reason that he knew of for Isaac to live like a slob and be so irresponsible. And his choice of lover and friend in Greg Doyle would forever confound him. Isaac's face twisted in fury, and he threw a pillow at Angel. He batted it away, and Isaac sprang to his feet, pointing at him, whole body shaking with anger. "You're a fucking stuck-up hypocrite, Angie. I'm not the one sleeping with vampires and teaching kids how to blow shit up and bend the veil. What you're doing is an insult to our family's memory. Isaac was so mad his eyes were wild, and his fingers shook as he stabbed Angel in the chest with the tip. Isaac was taller than him now, over 6 feet, and was long, lanky muscles over slim bones. Isaac was a handsome man, when he wasn't hungover and needing a shower. Angel was so struck by the difference in Isaac from the boy he raised that it took Isaac poking him hard enough to make him stumble that he thought about what his brother said. I'm not sleeping with vampires, damn it, and our family has taught high sorcery for hundreds of years, so how is that a disgrace to their memory? So you aren't fucking the Celt? That's not what I heard. Isaac tossed his hair back out of his eyes, glaring, and Angel slapped Isaac's finger away from his chest. Typically, Isaac ignored anything he didn't want to acknowledge, and he disregarded the fact that the Salvatore family history was full of teachers. Greg Doyle seemed to find something interesting in the corner to stare at, and Angel scowled at him before glaring back at Isaac. Detective Collins says the Celt spent the night in your bed. How the fuck? Angel started, but he bit it off. The cameras across the street would have shown Simeon carrying Angel up into his apartment after the vamp took him home. The State House cameras, goddammit! Did Collins give you trouble? That rude ass tried to curse me this morning after I banished the demon. I told that ass I had no idea what was going on and to shove his questions right before I slammed the door in his face. Isaac snapped back, which Angel could easily see since that's what Isaac did to him every time they spoke. So you are sleeping with him. And you dare to complain about Greg? I am not sleeping with Elder Simeon, and if I was... Angel stressed his next words. It would be none of your business. The Master and his elders are not part of the clan who killed our family. Your animosity does nothing but piss off the wrong people. A fanghead is a fanghead, Isaac said, brushing past Angel into the hall. Angel followed him down the hallway to the kitchen where Isaac opened the fridge and then slammed it shut again, the light inside staying dark. Fuck! I guess the power is out. That is what happens when you don't pay the bills, Angel muttered, kicking aside a few pairs of dirty socks. Who took their socks off in the kitchen? And why go to vamp bars all the time if you bear them such a grudge? They have the best booze. Personally, Angel thought it was because of all the places Isaac could go to party. He always went to a vampire bar, both courting danger and being protected by it. He was a sorcerer, so he wasn't food. He was a Salvatore, so he was hated and reviled. He was safe in the clan bars as he would not be in human establishments. Angel's vow from Simeon meant Isaac was untouchable in all the places run by the vampire clan in Boston and surrounding areas. Angel could see the destructive behavior, but had no answer for it. He didn't know what drove Isaac to ignore him, and yet when he was in trouble, Angel was always the person Isaac called first. In fact, he was the only person Isaac called. It both broke his heart and left him frustrated. Angel rolled his eyes and sat in the lone chair at the tiny, cluttered table in the kitchen. He refused to guess what any of the items were that littered the tabletop. Why haven't you activated the wards I put in place? You know how to power them. I taught you myself. Isaac was facing the sink, probably trying to find a clean glass amongst the dirty dishes covering the countertop and filling the basin. Angel looked around, and it seemed like every piece of cutlery was dirty, and there was a fine layer of dust on the appliances. Isaac was never this bad when he lived with Angel. His brother didn't answer him. An Angel took in his stiff shoulders and his lowered head. Isaac was stubborn and reckless with his safety. An Angel had no idea why. Ever since Isaac turned 18, his attitude and behavior grew steadily worse. They may never have been close as children, with Angel being 7 years the elder, but Isaac had been somewhat responsible as a teenager after Angel took custody. This belligerence and casual disregard for his own safety and lack of concern for his own brother was troubling. Isaac, the wards, Angel reiterated, trying to get a response. I forgot about them. Fuck! Why is it so damn important to you that I activate the fucking wards? Isaac snapped, and a glass broke in the sink with a racket, shards bouncing off the steel. Energy pooled in a scarlet glow around Isaac's tense frame. An angel waited, hoping Isaac found his control. Because, as I was just reminded by you a few moments ago, vampires killed our whole family, and not many people like me. So that means they can get to me through you. Because someone tried to get your lover killed by sending him into Vamp HQ under compulsion. Because, Isaac, a demon destroyed my apartment and tried to kill me. Angel stressed, one hand gripping the table as Isaac's power tumbled through the room. History has proven that when one Salvatore is in danger, so are we all. There is no coincidence in this very small world of those who practice. You know this. Please use the damn wards.
I don't practice. I don't use magic.
Isaac all but growled at him. An angel sighed, fed up. The glass broke because Isaac wasn't exerting enough control over his abilities. Your aura is out of control, Isaac, and you're spilling energy into the kitchen. Use your magic and what I've taught you, or your magic will use you. Silence greeted his last statement. An angel waited. The scent of heating metal rose from the sink, and the edge of the steel basin glowed beneath his brother's hands. Angel stilled, ready to intercede if Isaac lost control and set fire to his kitchen. He waited, but Isaac pulled most of it back and Angel relaxed. Isaac pushed away from the sink and walked past Angel without looking at him.
Get out, Angie. Leave me alone.
Isaac left the kitchen, red aura spilling and twisting in flashy trails of light behind him. He slammed the door to his room, leaving Angel at the table. Angel slouched in the chair, alone in the smelly, dusty, disgusting excuse for a kitchen, and broke a long-standing promise to himself to never hire someone to do something for Isaac or himself that they could do on their own. He pulled out his cell and started searching for cleaning services. His brother was not going to live in squalor in an apartment that cost in a year as much as the average household's car. Angel got up from the table and walked out to the living room, taking in the sad state of the expensive apartment his brother treated like a crash pad. Less than a year on his own, and Isaac was living like a squatter in his own home. Isaac sent one last look down the hall to where he could hear Isaac and Greg talking, their words indistinct. Leaving Isaac unprotected was not an option. He saved a link to a high-rated cleaning service and tucked his cell away. Closing his eyes, Angel sent his awareness out and activated the wards. They were barely awake, lacking in power, and it was more than obvious that Isaac hadn't spared them a single line of energy since Angel put them in place the day Isaac moved in. Angel opened up his connection to the veil, a thin line that was more than enough to charge the wards to full power. He let the power build, activating all of them, and then laid down a new layer, one that would prevent Isaac from turning them off. His brother was powerful enough to do it, but Angel was certain Isaac was too lazy to bother spending the effort required to bring them down. Better safe than sorry, though, so he locked Isaac out of the wards. Angel withdrew his connection to the veil and pulled his mind away from the wards. They glowed to his inner eye, vibrant and active. Angel left Isaac's apartment, making sure the door was locked behind him. He dialed the cleaner's number as he walked back out onto the street. The snow was melting as soon as it touched the ground, the faintest of hissing sounds made by the tiny flakes falling and his breathing, the only sounds in the quiet cemetery. Angel, the only living soul present. Angel gripped the iron spikes of the fence that surrounded King's Chapel burying grounds. The shadows deep, seamless. The closest rows of headstones were visible. The dates and names wore down by time and weather. Coastal winds were unkind to the markings of man, scouring them to nothing and toppling even the strongest of stones. His family, all of them but for Isaac, were dead. Their bodies burned to prevent their enemies from using their remains in spells and stealing their magic, and the ashes were scattered on the holy ground of King's Chapel. His parents, grandparents, uncles and aunts, his few cousins too, all of them dead in an attack that left the Salvatore mansion a ruin and then spilled out into the streets, leaving bodies of vampires and sorcerers alike littering the ground like leaves. Over 100 undead had been sent for the Salvatore clan, and he and his family had cut them all down. But not before the greatest of losses. Only Angel and Isaac survived. Angel's body seized up and curled in on itself, as if covering a mortal wound. He clung to the fence, the only thing keeping him upright as memories clamored to be heard, and garish visions of loved ones torn to pieces of bloody meat dashed across the inside of his eyelids. He let one sob escape before he bit his lip, tasting blood, staying conscious against the incipient panic attack that threatened to sweep him under. He breathed through the pain and regret, the terror and the horrible, devastating grief that haunted him every time he was weak and let it under his guard. Angel went through his days as if the past was only that. Gone forever, and forgettable. If he dwelled on the agony of his loss, he would never get back up. If not for Isaac needing him, depending on him, Angel may well have joined his family after that horrific night. Angel might have ended the blood wars in a terrifying display of death magic, but his efforts came too late. No wonder Isaac wanted nothing to do with him. Who would want to be around the person who let his whole family die? Now that he was grown and on his own, maybe dealing with Angel was too much for Isaac to stomach. He let go of the fence, dropping to his knees. The wet pavement instantly chilled him, but he was beyond caring. Angel stared through the iron, the ground covered with a thin layer of fresh snow. It covered the markers of people long dead. No one left to remember them or mourn. Chapter 5. Mourning Sickness. The half-finished arcs made by the youngster's shields meshed for a heartbeat before cracking and falling apart in a burst of light and smoke, ozone filling the heavily warded workroom. Angel hit a switch on the wall next to him and fans circulated in fresh air from the vents in the ceiling. Millie sent him a look that on the surface was calm and controlled, but Angel saw the frustration under the mask. 2 weeks now they'd been teaching defensive shield theory to the Serfano kids, and today's practice lesson was a failure. Not unusual, but it was with these two. Both bright, strong academic backgrounds and quick studies. Samuel and Mark Serfano were 20 and 21 respectively, and had both graduated from the Hollingsbrook Academy with high marks. They shouldn't be having such trouble in melding magics. It was common curriculum for students to meld magic with each other and instructors, and happened routinely in courses throughout a student's time in the practitioners' academies. And, as brothers, their magic was similar and should meld easily. Should. But it wasn't happening. Angel pushed off from the wall he was leaning on and walked into the center of the room, knocking down the reforming fledgling shields with a negligent wave of his hand and a minor expenditure of power. The eldest brother, Mark, glared at him from beneath heavy brows. An Angel thought for an inappropriate second that a face like his was the same as every bully Angel faced growing up. While Mark was intelligent, he was also spoiled and self-centered, and any lack of success on his part was the result of bad teaching, instead of his inability to bend his pride and say he needed help learning. Samuel, the younger brother by a year, was quiet and reminded Angel of Isaac as a teenager. Before the attitude and simmering resentment, at least. Where Mark led, Samuel followed. An Angel had a feeling that Samuel understood the basics but refused to show his brother up and let his half of the shield work collapse when he saw his brother struggling. "This isn't working," Mark complained, dark eyes and wrinkled brow teeming with what Angel imagined was embarrassment behind bruised pride. "Why should a sorcerer learn to meld shields with another anyway? I thought the higher ranks didn't need to combine magics like this. This is witch-ranked stuff for weaker practitioners." "Mark, come on," Samuel started, but his brother shot him a glance and Samuel snapped his mouth shut. Millie sighed and pushed away from her position on the far wall opposite Angel. The floor between them, where Samuel and Mark stood,
was heavily warded, and overlapping concentric circles of various sizes were burned into the wood floor, shimmering in the overhead lights and the sun pouring in through the skylight.
"Mr. Stefano, every sorcerer learns how to meld magic, whether it be with blood relations like your brother, or a perfect stranger they've just met,"
Millie stated as she daintily picked her way over the black and iridescent lines that hummed with energy, even powered down.
"While blending magic is indeed a common practice among the lower ranks of practitioners when they need to increase their power base, the joining of shields is a critical skill that can one day save your life. Not all dangers in this world are seen from afar, and not all confrontations with magic are handled on a field of honor between single combatants."
"And joining shields is the most basic of skills, and the one most likely to save your life. Instead of having to tap into the veil and draw attention to yourself, you can meld magics and shield yourself and your companion faster if you know how to meld your magics with another sorcerer. If an enemy is as powerful as you are, or even more so, tapping into the veil can create a surge that he or she can detect, giving away your position." Angel spoke without much hope of Mark truly grasping the necessity of learning the defensive spells of shield work. He was temperamental and aggressive, only putting his best efforts into the offensive arts. One day that lack of study could be his undoing.
"Enemy? Giving away my position? The blood wars are over, Salvatore. No one's fighting anymore. Everyone's dead. This is stupid,"
Mark blurted, crossing his arms over his beefy chest and almost pouting.
"And speaking of the wars, I'd rather learn how to beat someone in a battle, but that's never gonna happen here. Fucking waste of time. I bet you won on a fucking fluke. Stroke of luck."
Angel tensed at the mention of the wars, and Millie and Samuel both sent Mark a nasty glare. Angel mentally brushed off the young man's attempt to rile him, instead keeping his face a blank slate. Mark glowered when his remark fell flat, and Angel turned away before his lips could quirk up in a small smile. Millie saw, though, and he could see her relief that Mark's barb missed its mark. Long practice teaching taught him when things started to get nasty, end the lesson and pick it up after a break. He needed to step back, for his sake and theirs. Years of teaching together gave Millie the impeccable ability to read him, and she nodded when he tilted his head at the door.
"Let's pick this up next week,"
Millie said, as Angel went to the door opening it. Fresh air rolled in from the rest of the suite, taking away the scent of ozone and attitude. Samuel looked like he wanted to argue, but Mark wasted no time in escaping the workroom and heading for the closet where their gear was stored. Millie escorted Samuel past Angel, and Angel gave the younger man a sincere goodbye before Millie walked the boys out. Angel left behind the workroom, heading for the office he and Millie shared that overlooked the street below. It was late afternoon now, and Angel wanted to head home. He heard the door shut behind the brothers, and Millie's heels on the hardwood as she headed his direction. Angel had time to find his chair and kick back before Millicent swept in majestically, radiating tension and aggravation.
"Maybe we need to let Mark go as a student,"
she said, working around to take a seat at her desk, his and hers facing each other from either side of the room, their backs to the walls and a wide space between them covered by a thick rug and several chairs for guests and prospective students.
"At this point in his development, he won't change his thoughts or attitude unless something drastic happens. Samuel is leaps and bounds ahead of his brother, and is handicapping his own progress so as not to show up Mark. That isn't good for either of them."
"You read my mind, Millicent," Angel said, dropping his head back and staring at the ceiling. He was so tired. Samuel would do better without Mark's influence. But that won't happen unless he wants it enough.
"Perhaps we can call them in for different sessions. Alone, so Samuel can grow into his full potential, and Mark can try and pull his head out of his arse."
Angel cracked out a surprised laugh, looking at his friend, Millicent's guileless expression enough to make him shake his head. He felt a bit better, though he was still tired as hell. He thought longingly of his bed and soft pillows.
though sleeping in his bed would have to wait. He needed a new one after the demon's attack, and the couch was slowly killing him. Give it a few days, and call Samuel. See if he'll go for it, Angel said, and Millie nodded in agreement. Their parents are paying an obscene amount of money for lessons. It won't matter, really, if the boys are taught together or separately. Angel reached for his keys and cell, the device left on his desk so the magical energies in the workroom didn't fry it. He checked his messages, but there was nothing. Isaac only contacted him for bail or a ride home, and it seemed a certain elder was deciding it was prudent to avoid him. He might get to enjoy his undead existence longer if he stayed away from Angel. He rubbed a hand over his heart as a soft pang of regret echoed at that thought.
Has anything happened since the demon's attack?
Millie asked suddenly, and she fiddled with the immaculate surface of her desk, adjusting a neat row of pens with slim manicured fingertips. Not a blessed thing, Angel said. Did you see if I suddenly had an archenemy sprout from the list of rejected students?
You are so funny,
Millie retorted, and Angel smiled, standing. It was time to go home. He wanted something to eat and a pillow under his head. The couch would do for another night.
I couldn't find the name from that one young man who you turned away months ago. Do you recall anything about him in particular?
He was rude and arrogant, Angel said, pocketing his stuff and walking for the door, Millie standing and following him out. Not unattractive, but nothing that makes him stick out in my mind. Young, 20 or so, blonde, and swore at me when I ordered him out of the office after he got too nosy about, well, you know. The young man had asked after the night Angel's family died, and the spell Angel cast to strike down the undead that killed his loved ones, though it was years since someone asked him point blank to his face about what happened that night. The avid and callous nature of the curious still left him bitter and angry. Of course, with the way Mark Stefano was acting lately, that idiot was probably gearing up to ask it as well. Nothing appealed more to belligerent people than spells of mass destruction. If Mark asked, Angel would cut him loose as a student and hope Samuel stayed.
That's almost every student we've had in the last few years,
Millie stated. An Angel would have to agree. Millie, thankfully, and with more kindness than most people credited her with, didn't touch on the topic of his family. She knew enough of what happened that night to leave well enough alone.
Most of the magical families have ill behavior and arrogance bred into their bones.
No argument from me, Angel agreed, thinking briefly of his own heritage. The older and more powerful the family, the more arrogant and insufferable they became, though his had redeemable members, before they all died.
Did you do as I asked? You got some sleep?
Millie said as they walked to the front of the suite, collecting their coats from the closet. Millie hit the light switches, darkening the space as Angel got his keys. Eventually, Angel said, opening the door and holding it for Millie. The small landing right outside their door barely large enough for the both of them to stand. He locked the door and was about to make a spectacular lie about going to sleep and not gallivanting about town, when Millie let loose a shrill scream. Angel grabbed at Millie, yanking her behind him so she stood between him and the wall. A shield rose in front of him, his instincts coming to the fore. A shimmering wall of glass-like energy that coursed with thin green rivers. He slammed it forward, making space between where they stood and the figure on the stairs. The stairs were shadowed and quiet. No breathing. No words. Just his pounding heart and Millie's startled gasps. And the sound of blood, dripping. He knew that sound. Hard not to, even a decade later. Blood spat with a particular cadence, a lazy roll of patters and drops that crept into his nightmares. Angel eyed the figure in the dark stairwell, and there was no movement.
Angel?
Millie whispered, clutching at the back of his coat with one hand, trying to peer around him. Millie, call 911. Angel ordered, straightening from the protective stance he'd fallen into when he pulled Millie behind him. He poured more power into his shield, and green hellfire illuminated the walls and steps. And an ambulance. But I think it's too late for that. The body leaning against the wall on the lower landing a dozen steps down was covered in blood, which made sense since it was torn to shreds. Angel would guess it was a man, going by the remains of the clothing and the size of the body. But he couldn't tell much beyond that. Blood fresh and dripping in small waterfalls, pooled and eddied on the landing, running in a cascade down the turn on the landing to the next set of stairs. Angel couldn't see past the 90-degree turn in the stairs, and whoever left the body there could be right around the corner. Millie had her cell out, and she was talking to the dispatcher, giving their address and describing the situation. Angel was about to suggest they go back inside and wait for the police, when he heard what sounded like movement on the stairs. If he were alone, Angel would have run down and confronted whoever was leaving freshly killed corpses on his stairs, but Millie's presence reined him in. His shield snapped and thrummed with power as Angel tapped into the veil, augmenting his own reserves, and he kept his eyes on the stairs and the body as he walked backwards, herding Millie back inside the suite. The sound came again, and Angel held up a hand silencing Millie. A sigh, a sliding susurration of hissing air. An Angel knew that sound. Like blood dripping from a body, Angel would never forget the sound of a hunting vampire. It was the kind of sound that made prey break cover and run, only to get caught in the open and eaten. Another hiss and a mocking chuckle drifted up the stairs, and Angel could hear the taunting challenge and the rasping laugh.
"Do you dare, Angelus?"
Words spun out from the hiss, barely decipherable, and Angel tensed as understanding flooded him. He was being taunted. A person was dead and laid out like a tossed gauntlet, and the monster on his stairs was laughing. It was still daylight, though the light was waning, but it was dark in the staircase, no sunlight whatsoever. It must have snuck in through the back alley, a narrow strip of cement that never got any sunlight, the shadows deep enough to provide cover. A car parked at the mouth of the alley would be under cover of deep shade as well. Vowing to have skylights put into the stairwell ceiling as soon as possible, Angel held his ground as the monster's words finally sank in.
"Do you dare? Come face me, necromancer."
Rage, unlike anything he'd ever felt before, swelled up from his center. An Angel took a step forward before caution could pull him back from the edge of recklessness. He wasn't alone. Millie was there, and while she was formidable and skilled, she had never been in combat with a vampire before, and her last duel was over 20 years ago. Millie caught him by the arm, and he would have shrugged her off, but the steely determination on her face and the fear behind it cooled his fury. Angel swore under his breath and took a step back, leaving his shield active, barring the unknown predator out in the hall. Millie dragged him backwards, and she grabbed his keys from his hand and unlocked the door, and yanked him into the suite, slamming the door and clicking the lock. It was hard to hold on to his patience, but Millie's arm around his waist kept Angel from tearing into the uniformed police officer taking their statements. Angel knew it was routine procedure to separate witnesses, but he must be pouring off more energy than he was aware, since everyone was giving him a wide berth and he was getting wide-eyed stares and hearing cautious whispers from the milling crowd. They were on the street in front of the university bookstore, and their offices were on the top floor of the building. It was a redo of the other morning. Cop cars and ambulance and forensic techs running around. Plainclothes detectives drinking coffee and directing the uniformed personnel. Except it was evening now, and twilight was slipping away into the dark of night. Angel was exhausted, again. But his collared rage was fueling him enough to keep his senses on high alert and his magic writhing like a caged beast under his skin. Traffic was blocked at either end of the street. Yellow crime scene tape and the coroner's van in Angel's line of sight. A gurney was being wheeled down the curb, frame squeaking as it headed to the transport, a black body bag weighing it down. Angel shifted, and Millie tightened her grip on him, as if she was afraid he would spontaneously combust and destroy the whole street. He was barely holding on to his temper, and the snide attitude of the sergeant taking their statements wasn't helping.
"So what did the voice say again?"
the sergeant asked, brows raised as he stood with his arms crossed, hip cocked out, pompous attitude rolling off him in waves. Angel narrowed his eyes and drew in a breath, preparing to verbally flay the jackass, when Millie answered for him.
"The vampire said, 'Do you dare?'"
she said calmly.
"It used his birth name, and that's all it said before we went back inside and locked the door. The lot of you showed up 2 minutes later."
"Uh-huh. And how do you know what a vampire sounds like? How do you know it was a vamp? Did you use a spell or something?"
The cop was making it clear he didn't believe a word coming from Millie's mouth. An angel clenched his free hand, holding back the urge to toss a hex at the man's face.
"It was a vampire," Angel stated firmly, voice flat and crisp. "That was the hissing sound they make while hunting. It typically frightens prey into running. I know that sound better than I know my own voice. I didn't need a spell. There is no doubt to me that the killer is a vampire."
"But you didn't see the other person on the stairs. You just said you didn't cast a spell to learn who it was on the stairs. You said whoever spoke was around the corner from the landing. So how do you know?"
"Because I've heard vampires hunting before," Angel snarled, and the air snapped, small bright green sparks flashing to brief life around them.
Millie pinched his side and Angel pulled his magic back in, struggling not to show it on his face that he was losing control.
"I heard it the night a bewitched army of vampires swarmed my family home and tore my kin to pieces of meat, like the poor man on the stairs. That's how I know."
The green sparks finally registered with the sergeant, who took a cautious step back, arms coming down, one hand hovering near his firearm on his hip.
"Your name is Salvatore, you said?"
"As if you don't fucking know already," Angel snapped, seeing the epiphany in the sergeant's eyes. "I am Angelus Salvatore, and whoever the vampire is who killed that man on the stairs is coming after me because of who I am. He knew my name."
"Heard you killed 100 vampires with a thought back in the day," the sergeant said, suspicion clouding his words. "Why wouldn't you take on one? Sorcerer like you should be able to handle it."
"Fuck you," Angel gritted out, and the sergeant put a hand on top of his firearm.
"Doesn't make sense that a badass sorcerer with your reputation wouldn't have taken out one vampire in that situation. You sure someone was there? Maybe you were just hearing things. Maybe there wasn't anyone else there at all, and you put the body there."
"Angel?"
Millie said, yanking him backward when he raised his right hand, green fire snaking between his fingers.
"He's just an asshole. He wants you to attack him. Look at his name tag."
Angel tore his eyes from the smirking bastard's face and looked at the silver tag resting over his right breast pocket. "Sergeant Collins, BPD.
"A fucking Collins? What the hell? Did a lot of you go around planning on how you're going to harass me every time something happens? Is there a secret We Hate Salvatore club I'm not aware of? I've half a mind to throw a set of iron cuffs on you."
Sergeant Collins started, patting the leather case on his other hip that presumably held his cuffs. Iron was used to incapacitate most magic users, as it dampened the internal energy a caster carried.
"Half a mind is too generous,"
Angel retorted, and the sergeant mottled red with anger. Angel could probably burn through iron cuffs with enough veil power, but he wouldn't do such a thing unless the need were dire and his life was in danger. And escaping police custody and being hunted as a fugitive was not a viable option compared to calling his lawyer. A couple of plainclothes detectives were walking over, apparently deciding that they didn't want the sergeant flattened on the pavement. They stepped up next to Millie and Angel just as Millie took up his defense.
"Angel didn't kill the victim,"
Millie snapped at the sergeant.
"We don't even know who he is."
Angel dragged in a breath, trying to cool his temper. Grief battled anger, merging to become rage in his heart. He wanted to leave and track down the monster who decided to kill one of the last remaining links to his past. Actually, Millie, I know who that dead guy is. I saw his face before the cops pulled him off the wall.
What?
Millie gasped out, turning to look up at him.
Who is it?
My old mentor, and my father's best friend. A sorcerer named August Remington. Chapter 6. Dearly Departed. Angel trudged up the stairs to his place, rounding the last landing before getting to his floor. If he never saw another staircase again, it would be too soon. It had to be around 3 or so in the morning, and he was exhausted, running on fumes and anger, and then a dose of grief and painful memories left Angel cursing his decision to wake up that morning. Or yesterday morning, now. He dug out his keys, so tired he was tripping over his own feet. He stopped in front of his door, but the sight of 2 feet clad in black leather shoes, topped by long, muscular legs in dark navy slacks and then a lean waist and broad shoulders under a perfectly tailored tuxedo jacket, short-circuited his brain and left him gaping. Resplendent in a dark blue tux with crisp white shirt and shiny blue silk tie, Simeon leaned against the wall next to Angel's apartment, hands in his pocket, a charming smile on his lips. Angel caught a tiny flash of fang as Simeon smiled wider, chuckling. Angel flashed back to the first time he ever saw Simeon and felt the same wrenching need to reach out and touch.
"Not often that I see you speechless, Mulgra," Simeon purred, seductive lilt on full force.
By all that was unholy, he had an undead Irish James Bond in his hallway.
"What has you so tired, and out so late?"
"Dead guy," Angel whispered, coughing before trying again. Simeon in a tux was the last thing he expected at 3 in the morning. His heart was jumping all over the place. "A vamp left a dead man outside my office. I just spent the whole night at the police station." Simeon went still, a motionless state of being that no human could achieve, and his green eyes lit over Angel with a swift examination. Suddenly, so fast Angel couldn't see when Simeon went from the wall into his personal space, Simeon was leaning over him, sniffing deep, stone-cold hands gripping Angel's biceps and holding him still.
"I cannot scent another vampire on you, Angel. He or she did not touch you. Which is good for them, for they would not live another night if they had."
Simeon pulled Angel in, roping thick arms around his back, and Angel found himself cradled in a deep embrace, cheek resting over the silent place where a heartbeat should be heard.
"Tell me what happened."
"Why are you here?" Angel asked instead, too tired to listen to the tiny voice in his head saying that snuggling with a vampire elder when another vampire was depositing dead people at his feet like an evil cat was a bad idea. He squashed that voice and did something he rarely ever contemplated. Took the comfort offered.
"I'm here because I thought perhaps it was time," Simeon whispered,
his cool lips gliding over Angel's hair, strong hands rubbing his back.
"And I arrived to see I'm more needed than I expected. Tell me what happened, Mulgra, so that I may help."
"What do you mean, you think it's time for what? And are you okay?" Angel asked, pulling back enough to look up into Simeon's face. "The demon tossed you so hard, and then dawn broke."
"Nothing but a few bruises and a mild sunburn, Angel. My limo was a block away, and I made it just in time for you to blow up the street. Now, stop changing the subject. Will you tell me what's going on?"
"You're one to talk about changing the subject. I'll tell you, but not in the hall." Angel gave in, sighing. If anyone could help him find out who killed his old teacher, it was Simeon. He was elder of the only vampire blood clan in the city. He lifted his keys, but Simeon took them from his hand and opened Angel's battered front door, stepping inside and flicking on the lights. Angel humphed, and followed Simeon in, closing and locking the door. Simeon stepped gracefully into Angel's living room, the blanket and pillow he'd used still on the floor. An Angel was about to go around Simeon and pick them up when he halted in shock. He stared at Simeon, who was the epitome of masculine elegance and sophistication, every fangbanger's wet dream come to undead life. How did you get in here? I've never invited you in, and my wards let you through. They're still active and they aren't reacting at all. In fact, you were in my bed the other night, too. Simeon unbuttoned his tuxedo jacket and sat on the couch, patting the cushion next to him. Angel narrowed his eyes, and somehow found the strength left to summon a bit of green hellfire about his fingers, spitting and hissing. What the fuck, Simeon?
Peace, Angel. Your vulgarity is charming. Has anyone told you that? Come sit beside me.
Simeon patted the cushions again and Angel snapped his fingers, a tiny dart of hellfire slinging past Simeon's face to spatter and smoke out on the hardwood floor behind the couch. Simeon didn't even flinch, his smile in place and his green eyes glowing with what Angel uneasily identified as appreciation and affection. Angel stood, unyielding, and Simeon chuckled, a deep rumble that made Angel's cock twitch despite his best efforts to keep himself under control.
Fine, then, my love. The other night, when I brought you home, you were so exhausted you barely had the cohesive thought to invite me in. But your invitation was explicit enough that the gaze which prevents the undead from entering the dwellings of the living was lifted. And, as such, it translates to your wards as well, whether or not they were active at the time. My invitation into your home means I'm allowed to be here, and so your wards have no effect on me whatsoever.
Holy shit. An invitation makes you impervious to wards.
Angel breathed out, incredulous, letting the hellfire die. Why doesn't everyone know that? He mentally smacked himself, thinking it would be a foolish move to disclose such an advantage, especially since the rest of the world believed a vampire could be kept out by wards, even with a standing invitation into someone's home. Is that just you? Or all vampires? Simeon sent him a wry glance. An Angel shrugged.
Had to ask. So you can now come and go, and no matter what wards I have in place, you can still pass through them.
Yes. Until you decide I'm no longer welcome in your home, and you revoke my invitation. You do that, the wards will be effective once again, and I'll be forced to leave.
Simeon gave him an answer so easily that Angel had to doubt the veracity of his revelation. But he was too damn exhausted to do anything other than mentally file it under things he would freak out over later. Yet Simeon had never lied to him, or offered anything but the truth. So, maybe this time, his inclination to distrust was not warranted.
Come, sit with me, Angel. Tell me what's going on. Is it to do with the demon attacking us, this dead man?
Angel mentally said, fuck it, and stumbled over to the couch. He sat down heavily and Simeon gave him a mild look of exasperation before he reached out, and with one long arm pulled Angel to his side and held him close. Snuggling was a foreign experience, and Angel held himself stiffly until Simeon made no further moves.
Just held him. Always so prickly. So wary.
Simon cradled Angel to his side, the vamp smug, yet also tender. Angel spied him with suspicion, but he was willing to be held as long as Simeon kept his hands in PG-13 areas of his body. While his cock would disagree, Angel didn't want a repeat of the other morning in his bed. He didn't think he did, at least. Every time he saw Simeon these days, he ended up allowing one more little thing. From a touch to this. This snuggling. Angel was used to quick, hard fucks that scratched an itch with no names exchanged and no numbers. Not this quiet intimacy.
Mogra, you are a delight.
I am not your love, Simeon, Angel groused, peeved. He was tired and cranky, and bothering a cranky sorcerer was a recipe for disaster. Simeon merely responded by manhandling Angel, ignoring his growls and complaints, until Angel straddled Simeon's lap, hands on his chest, palms cushioned by the soft and decadent fabric of Simeon's tuxedo jacket. "I'm not some twink you can play with, either."
Twink. I hate that word. Reminds me of a snack.
Simeon flashed his fangs, and Angel humphed again, unimpressed. "This modern age leaves me despondent some days," Simeon said, putting a hand on Angel's back and pressing him forward, leaving no space between them. Angel was small enough compared to Simeon that he still had to look up to see Simeon's face, even sitting on the vamp's lap.
"A man has the freedom to love another, though any hope of intelligent conversation needs to be abandoned at the door. Not so with you, Angel. Never a disappointment."
"I thought you wanted to know about the dead man," Angel asked, arching a brow yet settling in comfortably. Simeon may be cool to the touch, but he was warming where their bodies met. And Angel was so tired that for once being held wasn't something to be borne, but enjoyed. In fact, he could not recall at all the last time he was just held.
"Yes. Tell me of this dead man. He meant something to you."
"How do you know?" Angel asked, rubbing his cheek against the soft fabric covering Simeon's chest.
"I can smell your sadness."
"What? Can you really?" Angel tried to lift his head, curious, but Simeon shushed him and put his head back down. Angel growled, but all Simeon did was chuckle. "I knew vamps can smell certain things, like anger and, arousal." A hand slid down to the base of his spine, fingertips dipping briefly under his waistband. Angel tensed, but the hand went no further, and he relaxed.
"So I can, Mora."
Simeon was all but purring, and Angel had the insane image of a fat Cheshire cat licking its lips, sharp teeth gleaming in the shadows. Oddly enough, that thought made him smile, and he relaxed even more. The words came before he even realized he was talking. "Augustus Remington was my last teacher, and my father's best friend," Angel said. "He was out of town at a wedding when the... when..." Angel's whole body shook once, and Simeon soothed him, rubbing his back and shoulders. "Well, you know, when my family died."
"I do, Angelus. I know the tale. No need to explain."
"Yeah, well, I saw him at the funeral services afterward. He was broken, destroyed. He loved my father a great deal. August and my father were inseparable as children and young men at university. He was a natural choice, according to my father, to teach me the finer points of high sorcery once I left school."
"Why did your father not teach you? It's my understanding that Rain Salvatore was the premier instructor of high sorcery in all of the Northeast."
"And he was." Angel coughed, his chest tightening at the thought of his father, but he kept going. "My father and I were too much alike. The teacher-student dynamic was too much on top of father-son." Simeon chuckled, and Angel thrilled internally that he could hear the sound at its genesis, his ear pressed tightly over Simeon's chest.
"I imagine that was difficult."
"That's one word for it. I would have chosen apocalyptic, but whatever works."
Simeon laughed, and Angel smiled despite the grief-tainted memories.
"So, anyway, he wasn't there that night when my family died. He came back as soon as he heard, but obviously it was too late. August just broke. I'd already passed my trials, so technically he wasn't my instructor anymore. But the relationship was still there. I thought of him as an uncle of sorts. I grew up with him in my father's shadow."
"When was the last time you saw him?" Simeon asked. Quiet, almost gentle. A vampire with a heart was an oddity. An Angel was charmed despite his reservations. It helped he was sprawled across the supernat's lap like a lazy stripper or a house cat.
It was just after he released me from my student status and confirmed I passed my trials. He told me that even if I hadn't already completed them, that night would have earned my sorcerer rank anyway. It was a cruel thought that I... Never mind. I saw him again a week or so later, after the funerals, and then that afternoon at the police station when they finally dragged me in for questioning. Apparently, humans had an issue with an army of undead spontaneously combusting and then setting a whole street on fire. The police arrested you for stopping the undead legion that killed your family. Simeon sounded aghast, grievously peeved, in fact. An angel laughed this time. It was harsh and bitter, but a laugh all the same. There were enough neighbors from surrounding estates as witnesses, and the wizards on the police forensic squad were able to piece together what happened after the fires were put out. I wasn't charged with anything, cleared by self-defense. It was just bullshit from the Collins family, since most of them are in the BPD. The Collins are related to the McAvoys, the family that led our enemies in the Blood Wars.
From what I understand, the McAvoys are no longer a power player in the city.
Simeon would know, since the Master probably knew everything about all the magical families in the state, let alone the city. It stood to reason that Simeon, as an elder, knew just as much as his Master. Simeon's clan had only been here a few years, arriving not long before they met for the first time. No, not anymore. After that night, the humans were able to intervene, since the undead that came for us tore through anyone in their way. And that meant the human guards and staff in the house and on the grounds that night. 30 humans died. So the cops came in. The state authorities finally had enough to use against the McAvoys, and most of those responsible for the attack on my home were sent to prison.
Most of them.
I'm not sure if the cops got...